morning. How's everybody doing today? I'm Brandon Kylie. He is Jeff Parles. The show is The Morning Blitz. We're coming to you live here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.FM. I told Jeff yesterday, Jeff, I don't think we're going to have to talk too much about Ray Rice anymore. I talked about it all week. We've talked about it with everybody on the show. We'll talk about it, but not a full segment. I mean, we'll just make it a footnote instead of being the entire show. Jeff, I don't think we're going to be able to handle that today.
Nope.
But coming up at 7:15, we've got Kevin Harlan. He's one of the best announcers in the business. He's going to be talking Chiefs with us. What the hell happened last week? We'll talk about that with Kevin Harlan at 7:15. And at 7:30, Carson Engel. He's a writer for SB Nation's Underdog Dynasty. He's a UCF alum, and he's a sports radio host in Orlando. So we'll discuss the UCF-Mizzou game with him. But as I said, we got to start with Ray Rice. I'm sorry, man. I know it's a bummer, and I didn't want to talk about it, but Roger Goodell, the guy's incompetent, man. Well, either that, or he's just negligent.
Kind of like your pronunciation there.
He's negligent on the highest of levels. So in case you didn't hear the rest of the story yesterday, if you got off work and you said, you know what, I don't want to hear anymore about the Ray Rice situation, I'm just going to go hang out with my kids, I'm going to go do whatever you do after 5 o'clock. Well, Roger Goodell has now asked a former FBI director to conduct an independent investigation into the NFL's investigation of Ray Rice. Now, why did this happen, you may be asking? Yeah, that's a really good question. Seems really odd that Roger Goodell would have to appoint a former FBI director to conduct an investigation of his investigation, right? Okay, well, the AP had a report about around 4 o'clock yesterday that a law enforcement official says he sent the NFL a video of the Ray Rice situation inside of the elevator back in April. He did this in April. He says that he has a 12-second, it was a case of anonymity. He says that he or she has the video, and then they have a 12-second recording of confirmation of the NFL getting said video. The jig's up, man. If he knowingly didn't watch the video, if he did watch the video and has lied to everybody ever since, those are both fireable offenses. If he had the video inside of the NFL's offices and didn't know about it, I don't know if that's a fireable offense, but that's so bad on so many levels that I don't know how you could keep him. Parles, your thoughts?
There's so much to be said here. First off, though, I'll say this. With the whole thing with Goodell, I think at this point, I think it's unrealistic for us to think that the owners are going to fire him.
I don't.
I really do. At this moment, right now. In a week, can that change? Sure. But even with all of this, at this moment, I'm going to put it at under a 5% chance that the owners would can him.
Here's the thing. If Roger Goodell's watched this video, he's gone.
Yes, that I agree with.
I'm not convinced he has it.
But I don't think he has.
Why?
I just don't think he has at this point. I don't think any real human being could watch that video and only give him two games. And here's the other thing for this. And I want to look at the Baltimore perspective here. Because ABC also reported that Baltimore had acknowledged of the film. And I forget exactly what the report is. I just have to look at it real quickly to just refresh myself. But it sounds like Baltimore was completely tipped off of the video from Rice's law
attorney,
team.
Yeah.
And they did nothing. Now, here's the thing that's tricky with all this. If Goodell has to go from this with knowledge of this video, doesn't Biziotti have to go?
Who?
Doesn't the Ravens owner have to go? Doesn't Ozzie Newsome have to go?
It's different for them than it is for Roger Goodell.
Okay.
And here's why. Roger Goodell has come into this league as a guy that's been, he said from day one, I'm an iron fist leader. I'm going to make sure that our personal conduct policy, that is the number one thing on my mantle. If by the time that I leave, the personal conduct policy is in a way that we are no longer seen as a league that gets into trouble the way that we were whenever I got here, that is what I want my legacy to be. He wants the game to be safe, and he wants the game to be he wants the image to be clean. Those are the two things that Roger Goodell has said from day one are his job.
Okay.
Safety, concussions. What did he say in front of Congress less than 5 years ago? He said the NFL does not, the concussions that are taking place in the NFL are not linked to these post-career problems.
Well that's already
that's been proven wrong.
Yeah, that's
and
already
the
been
other thing, Roger Goodell knew that was wrong. He knowingly lied in front of Congress. So, whatever. We'll get past that. We moved past that at the time. We're moving past it now. Now, if this is the second thing where Roger Goodell is straight up lying, if he is saying, I didn't even know about that video. I wasn't aware of it. I didn't think we could get it because we didn't get it from law enforcement. And then he had it from law enforcement. He's got to go. Now, with the Ravens and their ownership and their general manager, look, they messed up big time on this.
Yeah.
This is a bad look for everybody in the NFL, not just for the Ravens, not just for Roger Goodell, but for the NFL in general, because they're all stained by this. But the Ravens, to a lesser extent than Roger Goodell, Roger Goodell is in charge of this league. Roger Goodell is in charge of enforcing these rules, and he's the one that gave Ray Rice the 2-game suspension. He's the one that had this inside of his NFL offices. This is on Roger Goodell. It's also on the Ravens, but it's mostly on Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell, if he knew that it was in his NFL offices, he has to be gone.
It's pretty funny for this because I'm kind of obviously if the film's in the NFL's offices, and because in this situation everyone's just spewing ridiculousness all over the board.
Sure, yeah.
They, who knows what side is actually telling the truth?
And that's the other thing. We don't know that the AP report is 100%.
Exactly. Accurate. That's the thing. That's the one thing I'm going to back off here. And no, and for all these reports, ABC's reports, the AP's reports, yeah. What the NFL is saying, what's Baltimore saying, what the New Jersey State Police is saying. At this point, the only thing we know is valid is that Ray Rice punched out Janae Palmer, now Janae Rice, and she was knocked unconscious in that elevator. That is the one thing we do know. We have video, irrefutable video evidence that happened. Now, if anyone had the film in the NFL, if it's anyone in that office, if it's anyone in Baltimore, or if it's anyone anywhere, honestly, the 2-game suspension, obviously, from the beginning was obscene. Should have been a minimum of 8 right off the bat. But you look at it from this perspective, Brandon. We're not going to know exactly what happened with this video and its distribution and lack of distribution or whatever, or lack of viewing or whatever, for at least 4 months with this new FBI, with this new investigation.
Look back to last year with the Dolphins.
Exactly.
That didn't come out for a few months.
Yeah, we're not going to know probably until December at the absolute earliest. And honestly, I would be stunned if we hear about it before the Super Bowl. That's the way I think it's going to be. Well,
because the NFL is reporting. They don't want to.
Correct.
They don't want any more of this.
Well, exactly. They don't want it until the season's done.
We're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, I really don't think we're going to see this report until the end of February.
Wouldn't shock me at all.
End of February, beginning of March. That's probably when
I think it has to come before that, though.
Normally it probably would come in December.
Yeah. Yeah.
But do you think it's going to be released in week 16 in the middle of a playoff chase?
You can't, if you're the NFL, you can't preempt your playoffs by something like this.
No, I understand.
You just can't have that. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. This is just not going to be, this is not going to be resolved for a very, very long time.
The one thing that gives me pause about the AP report is in the first line of the report, it says that a law enforcement official sent the video of Ray Rice punching his then fiance to an NFL executive 3 months ago.
Okay.
While league officers have insisted they didn't see the violent image until this week. The person played the Associated Press a 12-second voicemail from an NFL office number on April 9th, confirming the video had arrived. 3 months ago.
Okay.
Now let's go ahead and do some calendar searching right here. 3 months ago was not April. Three months ago was June.
Right.
So if they got the video 3 months ago, but the 12-second voicemail is from April 9th, How does that, add up?
I didn't notice that, but you are right on that.
That doesn't add up.
That is incorrect because math.
That would mean that they got the voicemail before they sent the package.
Right.
So the voicemail could be, hey, you know, we saw what happened. We saw that this is happening with Ray Rice right now. We heard about it. We heard that he punched his wife in the elevator. This is awful. And the package could have come, and maybe nobody got it. And if that's the case, then we all freaked out yesterday about something that is factually inaccurate, basically. It's all just speculation, like, hey, we sent this package. Nobody ever got it. So at that point, Roger Goodell's safe, because then he would be like, look, dude, like, I never had this video. Nobody in my office had this video.
Well, then it's just incompetence.
Well, if they never got the video, then yeah,
it's incompetence. There's no way you can tell me that the NFL cannot get that video.
Well, that's the other problem.
There's no way they can't get that video.
It all comes down to what did they know and when did they know it. Yeah. And if they knew about this before they've let on that they did, which is basically them saying over the past week or so, look, we didn't have it. We didn't know anything about it. We got it when you got it.
Right.
And if they had knowledge previously to that, then this is bigger than just the NFL. Like, this is bad, man. Like, this
well,
is
the whole situation's
huge.
Awful.
Yes, it is. And we've kind of moved on from, and sadly so, we've moved on a little bit from the whole Ray Rice scandal, and now it's a Roger Goodell scandal. And here's the other thing, and I heard Bomani Jones say this yesterday. Can people please stop pretending like they are trying to help the Rice family? Like, they are in this to help the Ray Rice family. This is no longer about the Rice family. Sadly so, but it's no longer about the Rice family. We care about this individual case because of the NFL and because of Roger Goodell. And we want Roger Goodell, the generic we, want Roger Goodell out of his position. And that's why we've taken so much interest in this particular case. Is that fair to say? Am I completely off my rocker here?
Listen, obviously the one thing with this whole domestic violence problem that the league has, you now have this Ray Rice thing. Obviously, the punching out Jhené Paul.
Yeah.
Obviously, everything goes down. Now Rice is probably going to be out of the league, probably permanently. I just think at this point, no one's going to take a flyer on him after this. It's just obvious because he was awful last year on the field.
Exactly.
He was terrible. Under 3 yards a carry, 660 yards for the entire season for a guy who's routinely over 1,300 yards. Just, he's done. I think he's done in the league. The one thing that I want to see is now what happens out in San Francisco.
Yeah.
That's going to really be the barometer with all this now. Let's see if this is just a one-time thing that we had video of this happening and everybody just had to do what they did these last 2 days. Ravens cut Rice, which should have been done a while ago, especially with all the support Baltimore's thrown out for him over the months. Just the gems of that they've been tweeting out this whole time, the coverage of that press conference with the two of them.
Exactly.
Just flabbergasting how tone deaf someone can be. The I Like Ray column that was sitting on their website until 2 days ago.
Is it not there anymore?
I believe it's gone.
Okay. As of yesterday, it was still there.
Oh, then great. Even better. Yeah. Even better. I thought I had read that they had taken it down. Even better. Just the tone deafness around the league. And everything. Goodell's policy that he put into place, what was it, 3 weeks ago now?
Yeah, the 6 weeks.
Yeah, the 6 weeks to the lifetime ban. That's a start. Let's just see what happens at this point. I think we're now in a period where everyone in social media, anyone, everywhere, pretty much, we're in a waiting period.
Yep.
We got to wait and see what actually did go down in the league offices with law, with authorities. It just, we are in a wait and see moment. And that's honestly where everybody is just the worst behaved they possibly can be.
The thing though is, I just don't know how many options there are here. I don't know how many different routes we can go down because either route A, Roger Goodell knew about the video.
And then Roger Goodell's gone. Then Roger Goodell resigns.
Gone, yes.
Then he resigns.
Correct. Option B, Roger Goodell knew the video was in his NFL offices.
Uh-huh.
And then we don't know what happens there, but in my opinion, should be gone.
Then it gets tricky.
If it was in the NFL offices and he knew about it.
Well, here's the thing, though. I honestly, this may be ignorance on my end, but I really do think there's a chance that this thing was in the offices before Goodell knew about it. Before he knew that the office had it, someone saw it and got rid of it immediately.
If that's the case, that's different. It's in the office and he didn't know
about it. I honestly think...
That's different.
I'm saying if
it was in the office and he knew about it and he didn't watch it,
uh-huh.
basically negligence,
yeah.
then he's gone.
But I think
Your third option, correct.
I think my scenario is definitely a distinct possibility.
It is. It's very much. And the fourth option is they just flat out never got the package.
Which I would have a hard time believing that's the case.
Well, if that's the case, then two of the three options, if you believe that the fourth one's not a real option, two of the three options say Roger Goodell's got to go, and the third one, in my opinion, is very much less likely. So right now we're looking at Roger Goodell knew about it, he watched the video, and he gave Ray Rice the 2-game suspension. Option two, Roger Goodell knew about it, didn't watch the video because he didn't want to see it. Option three, Roger Goodell didn't know about it, and it was gone within a few days after getting to the NFL offices. That, regardless of which one it is, that's DMing on the NFL. It's DMing about his managerial experience, and it's DMing about the fact that he is still the commissioner of the NFL.
He's not going anywhere, Brandon. He's not going anywhere for a while. I'm just letting you know that.
Probably true, but if option one or two are accurate, if that's what's happened, Roger Goodell's got to go, and I don't say that lightly because I don't like calling for people's jobs, but...
he'll be fine.
This has gotten so bad. Yeah, he's made $44 million last year. This has gotten so bad, and it's on so many different levels.
I just don't see how he is out as quickly as people want him to be out. If I had to make a prediction, Roger Goodell's going to be the commissioner for the beginning of the 2015 season. That would be my guess.
If I had to put betting odds at it right now, I think it would be about even money.
I think that's too high.
I disagree. Yesterday you have the National Organization for Women coming out saying that they want Roger Goodell to resign from his position. That's a very, very powerful organization. And they do not call for people to resign very often. I heard an interview with the president of the National Organization for Women yesterday, and she said, look, we don't take this lightly, but Roger Goodell he's become an issue in the NFL. We've seen 30-plus cases of domestic abuse under his watch in the NFL, and most of them either get zero suspension or, like Ray Rice, get a very minimal suspension, and it's all been on Roger Goodell's watch. And the reason that we've been talking about this one in particular is just because Ray Rice is a more well-known player. If it was Ray McDonald from the San Francisco 49ers, we're not talking about it as much. The NFL doesn't necessarily have a domestic abuse problem. The NFL has a problem with taking care of its domestic abuse problems, and that comes down on Roger Goodell. Coming up next, Kevin Harlan was on the call for the Chiefs' Week 1 loss. So, simple question for him. What the hell happened? We'll discuss it next with the best in the business. It's next on the Morning Blitz, KCOU 88.1 FM and online, KCOU.fm.
And welcome back into the Morning Blitz here on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.fm. Joined now by Kevin Harlan, an announcer for CBS Sports, TNT, and Westwood One. Kevin, first, where I want to begin with you were in Kansas City for the game, for the game last week. What did you make of the Chiefs' brutal loss to the Tennessee Titans?
Well, Brandon, good to be on with you, by the way.
Yeah, thank you.
I think fairly optimistic about where this season is headed. But if you saw their preseason, where their first offense did not score, and they were having issues with the offensive line, which continued into the opening weekend game against Tennessee, you saw that there were some problems right out of the gate that they were going to have to contend with just in the season opening game, let alone the rest of the month. So this is a team right now which, was lucky to get through last year with 11 wins. They didn't have many significant injuries on the ball club. They didn't turn the ball over, which they did against Tennessee three times on three interceptions by the quarterback. And they had a pretty easy schedule last year as compared to this season, which is much more difficult. And we knew that Tennessee was an improving ball club coming in. I think they showed that they've got even more going for them. And their quarterback seems to be back on track, Jake Locker. When you've lost one of your big playmakers like Dwayne Bowe, as they did in that opening game at wide receiver, and don't have a very effective day from Jamal Charles. Aside from that, there just is not much firepower. So you take all those aspects in and swirl them around, and you come out with the kind of performance that you saw. And I, you know, think it's going to take a while for them to kind of get their shorts on straight. They're going to have to figure out how to negotiate, you know, better teams they're going to face with the schedule. And only really two weapons that will put any kind of fear in the opposing offense, and that's Charles and Bo when he comes back. And we're assuming that Bo is going to do that. I mean, he is not an elite receiver. He is a good receiver, but he's not elite. And that limits you on offense and thus limits the chances and the options that the quarterback has. And then you begin to press and try to fit things where they don't fit. And the result is three interceptions and a pretty one-sided loss. And there could be more of those ahead.
And once again, we are joined by Kevin Harlan. He's an announcer for CBS Sports, TNT, and Westwood One. The one thing that I look at with this Chiefs team, and I see as a fairly large concern, where can you look on this team and say that position got better in 2014 compared to where they were in 2013? Because I'm not sure if I see anywhere other than maybe tight end where you get Travis Kelce healthy, but that's basically addition just by default. Do you see anywhere on this team that got better this year than they were last year?
Well, I can't say that I have. The offensive line will be in a state of flux until their right tackle is off the league-imposed suspension, which will happen at the end of the month, Donald Stevenson. Then everybody kind of moves back in their regular place, and then they'll have some continuity to that line. But for the first month, it's going to be, because he's got a four-game suspension, it's going to be a little bit rocky, and the feeling-out process will continue. So tight end, I would agree with you, not at wide receiver, not at running back. Quarterback stayed status quo, and defensively, while they drafted a kid fairly high in the secondary, he didn't have much of a impact on the game on Sunday. So I don't know. I guess they really did not get much better. They signed Vance Walker on the defensive line, but they lost Mike DeVito, a starter, and they lost Derek Johnson, a starter, as a linebacker. Derek Johnson might have been, you know, the if not the best player on that defense, then the second best. So not only did they not really have any impact players that they've added to this roster, but they lost two starters. And we're playing without two starters to begin with on offense. And you knew they were going to be in trouble, and sure enough, they were.
Kevin, Jeff Parles here. You were in Seattle for the opener, calling a game for Westwood One. Seahawks look mighty impressive against the Packers. Do you think that we might see a repeat from them this year?
Jeff, I think so. In fact, it's the first time I can recall here in the last handful of years that we've got, a fairly significant separation from the top team, and in this case Seattle, and maybe the second team, and that might be San Francisco. I think New Orleans, I think Green Bay, even though their showing was abysmal, I would say Green Bay still would be considered a top five, top seven team in pro football. There aren't many in the AFC, I know that, Denver certainly, and they're going to go up there in a couple weeks and play in Seattle. But most of the power teams reside in the NFC, and I think there's a pretty nice delineation between that top team, Seattle, and everybody else. The season may change that. Injuries certainly change things, but for right now, out of the blocks, Seattle was everything and then some that we thought they would be coming in as the defending champion.
And once again, we are joined by Kevin Harlan here on the Morning Blitz on KCOU 88.1 FM and online at kcou.fm. Going to where you were for Monday Night Football in the San Diego Chargers, sticking with the AFC West, how did the Chargers lose that game? It seemed like they had everything wrapped up and they were in commanding control of the game, and then somehow, some way down the stretch, the Cardinals find a way to come back. What did you make of that for the Chargers?
Well, I didn't know what to make. You know, they had one real mistake in the game, and that was on a late play that Rivers could not handle, a shotgun snap, and whether it was high or a little off-center, that's to be debated. Looked like it may have been snapped early, and Rivers was still in his pre-snap reads and was unsuspecting of the snap, and so had to jump back about 15 yards just to retrieve the loose and bouncing ball. And effectively, that knocked him out of field goal range. Well, that 3 points would have made all the difference in the world. So that was really the only difference, to be quite honest, in that game. Those were two very evenly matched teams. In fact, they are as much alike as I think any two teams in football. And you can begin right at the quarterback position, where You've got two guys that are basically the same age. Palmer, I think, has been in the league 1 year longer than Phillip Rivers, but they've both, seen great 2013 seasons. Rivers was one of the top five quarterbacks in pro football, and Palmer threw for over 4,000 yards for the third different team he's played for in his career, and that's an NFL first. So, you know, you got even teams, decent running attack, certainly, good wide receivers, strong secondaries right on down the line. These were two very good teams, and teams that easily could be in the playoffs. Arizona's going to give a run for any other team in the best division in football, the NFC West. And San Diego, I think, is just a little bit in back of Denver in the AFC West. And San Diego was a playoff team last year. In fact, won a game as an underdog in the playoffs and advanced to the second round. So I like both those teams a lot. I'd keep an eye on both of them, and I think it begins with their quarterbacking, and they were just so evenly matched. A one-point game is something you'd probably expect because it really was going to come down to one mistake, and the one mistake was the errant snap, and that forced no chance at a field goal, and they had to punt and gave Arizona the ball back, and sure enough, they marched downfield and won.
Kevin, you and Rich Gannon this week for CBS will be in Cincinnati for Atlanta and the Bengals. Bengals coming off a close win against Baltimore, and Atlanta shocking the Saints. What are you looking for from these two quarterbacks? Because Matt Ryan with his career day against the Saints and Andy Dalton gave you pretty much what I thought was a typical Andy Dalton day.
Again, very even teams in different conferences. Both have the strong quarterbacks. Both have running games that are parts of their offense, but not the strongest part. Both have good collections of wide receivers. Defensively, the playmakers are there. It looked like maybe the defense of Atlanta was able to show much improvement over last year, where they had all kinds of injuries, and they namely have tried to beef up the middle of that line, defensive line. So I think that's going to help them. They didn't get a great deal of push. I don't know that Breeze was pressured all that much, and I think that Mike Smith wants to work on that. But overall, you take on a team like New Orleans, one of the best teams in the NFC, and beat them on opening day, albeit in your own home. I think that speaks volumes for where Atlanta feels they are now after a year where, you know, they went 4-12, and people going into last year thought they might be a Super Bowl team, especially the way they played the year before, and they were very close to making the Super Bowl. And Cincinnati has been a playoff team under Andy Dalton every year, and they've got a coach who's been there the entire time. Now, they lost Tyler Eifert, who is their tight end. He has a dislocated elbow, and he's on the short-term injury list, which means that they can bring him off here in a month and a half or whatever, and that's going to help them, you know, in the last 2 months of the season. But it's going to hurt him here early because he was a big part of that offense. But I like what they've got in terms of speed and quickness in their offensive backfields. They both have, the passing attacks like I talked about, the quarterbacks to boot, long-term coaches. They're very, very similar, again, very much like those Chargers and Cardinals I was talking about from different conferences. Same with Atlanta and Cincinnati this weekend in Cincinnati.
He is Kevin Harlan. He's an announcer for CBS Sports, TNT, and Westwood One. We really appreciate you taking the time for speaking with us today, Kevin. Best of luck this weekend with the Cincinnati game.
Thank you, Brandon. Jeff, great to be on with you. Call again, please. Nice to visit.
Will do. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
Kevin. That is, once again, Kevin Harlan with CBS Sports, TNT, and Westwood One.
Coming up next, Carson Engel. He's a writer for SB Nation's Underdog Dynasty. He's a UCF alum. He's a sports radio host. What is the UCF perspective on this game this weekend? We'll discuss it next with Carson Engel on the Morning Blitz, KCOU, 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.com. And welcome back. It is the Morning Blitz here on KCOU, 88.1 FM and online at KCOU.fm. We got a big game this weekend. Mizzou's first real legitimate opponent of the season. They're playing UCF. It's going to be in Columbia. It's an 11 o'clock kickoff. We're going to discuss it right now from the UCF perspective with Carson Engel. He's a writer for SB Nation's Underdog Dynasty, and he's a sports radio host down in Florida. Carson, how's it going today, man?
I'm doing great. The only thing, am I really following Kevin Harlan? I feel wholly inadequate in this moment.
Well, hey, it's tough to follow Kevin Harlan. It's tough for us to even be on with Kevin Harlan, but I'm sure you're going to do great, man. So,
all right, sounds good.
What can you tell us about the UCF offense without Storm Johnson and Blake Bortles? What should Mizzou fans be expecting this weekend?
Well, it was interesting against Penn State. You UCF went with a redshirt freshman, Pete DeNovo. He did not look good in the first half and into a series of the third quarter. He went 3 of 8. They replaced him for Justin Holman. Holman went 9 of 14 for 200 yards and a touchdown in the air and on the ground. So Holman came in and asserted himself as being the guy going forward, and he looked pretty good, and they didn't have their starting running back, Will Standback, who still was a second-team all-conference guy last year, even with Storm there. They didn't have him for Penn State. They get him back for Missouri, so I would think that the Knights' offense is going to be churning a little bit more early on than they were in Dublin when they played the Nittany Lions.
And once again, we're joined by Carson Engel. He's a writer for SB Nation's Underdog Dynasty. He follows the UCF football team closely. So is that the reason why UCF had 29 carries for 24 yards last week, or was that something to do with Penn State's rush defense? Because I see that, and that jumps out on the box score.
Yeah, you know, the offensive line, they're breaking that in, too. That was really the only other area that they lost, in addition to Blake and Storm, and they've broken in 3 new starters there. So that may play in, but they get Standback back for this week, and he's kind of the guy. You know, the other two that are there running the ball, and really Dontrevious Wilson was the only guy that got carries in the Penn State game, just not effective. So I'd say maybe pump the brakes a little bit and let's see what they get from Standback on Saturday.
And once again, we are joined by Carson Engel. He's a writer for SB Nation's Underdog Dynasty. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hey, Carson. It's Jeff Parles here. The Knights' rush defense was pretty awesome against Penn State, limiting them to 57 yards. Is this what we should expect from the Knights' defense, more of a run-stuffing defense, more than a ferocious pass defense?
You know, I think so, although the coaching staff was disappointed with the defense as a whole, and they didn't get a very good pass rush. And I mean, Penn State threw it 47 times. So, you know, I'm not sure what to expect. I do expect a better UCF defense against Missouri just because I think there's a lot of talent there on that side of the ball, and they're really going to be tasked to improve. Even head coach George O'Leary came in this week and worked exclusively with the defensive line to try to go back to the basics and get more of a pass rush in this one. So I do expect a little bit of a better defensive effort, but certainly down here, I know a lot of the fan base is very concerned about Matty Mullock and what he can do against, the UCF secondary, and then what he can do on the ground against a UCF team that through the years has had some trouble with running quarterbacks.
And you mentioned we haven't mentioned them yet, actually, the receivers. Phil Steele, who I really enjoy his work, he ranks UCF's receiving corps as one of the best in the country in the preseason. What can you tell us about that unit, and were they underutilized in week one?
It's unbelievable. It's extremely deep. It's probably one of the best-kept secrets in the country in terms of a position group. They've played together for so long. J.J. Wharton, many people will remember his catch against Temple last year that made national news, that made the nightly national news, the one-handed catch against Temple. Rashad Perriman is son of an NFL, a former NFL player, could go pro as a junior. Josh Reese is a guy that comes in and makes timely catches. And they get Rennell Hull back this week, who they didn't have against Penn State, and he's probably their number one deep threat guy. So it's an extremely deep group, and that doesn't even mention a few more guys there. And you know what? Justin Holman got them going in the second half when he came in, so we'll see if he's able to sustain this. He's only a sophomore himself and coming in and making his first start of his career. So, you know, you never know if the guy that comes in replace of one guy is able to do the same thing as a starter. So that's what we get to find out on Saturday.
So you mentioned the running back that was out in week one. He's going to be back for week two. You mentioned a wide receiver that was out for week one. He's going to be back for week two, or I guess game two for UCF after having that bye week last week.
Right.
So this offense could just be completely different than what we saw in week one against Penn State.
I think so. I mean, you know, you go back and look at the second half of the Penn State game, and that's more of what you're going to see, where Holman got in literally not even the first series of the third quarter, so he came in the second series and threw for over 200 yards. He was the guy that I thought was going to start from the beginning. I actually wrote a column on SB Nation about 3 weeks prior that said he should be the guy. He was Bortles' backup last year. He got some action and some garbage time in a couple games, and he's just the guy that has the athleticism, that has the arm strength, and most importantly has the poise that I thought could get it done. They didn't go that direction. They start him in the second half, and he comes out and does what he did. So I think that's the UCF offense that you could expect a little more on Saturday.
And once again, we're joined by Carson Engel. He's a writer for SB Nation's Underdog Dynasty, as he mentioned there. So what are the expectations for UCF games going, or UCF fans, excuse me, going into this game? What are they worried about? What are they excited about? What are they looking for in this game?
I think the two things that they're worried about, just off of the UCF perspective, because there's plenty of things after the opener to have concern about, but I think the most things that I'm hearing down here is they're concerned about Matty Mock, his ability not only to throw it but to run it, and then the defensive ends. How are they going to impact a young offensive line, the defensive ends Golden and Ray that you guys have? You know, how are they going to impact this game? So I think those are the two things from a Missouri standpoint that the fan base is concerned about, but they expect to win this game. I mean, going down 0-2 to start the year in the position UCF is in now, not in a Power 5 conference, trying to be that one team that's not in a Power 5 conference to get to an Access Bowl, you have a pretty narrow margin for error to do so, and starting the season 0-2 would certainly be a difficulty towards achieving that.
So you've mentioned it a couple times, the young offensive line. What can you tell me about that offensive line, and are they any good? It's one thing to be young. Are they good?
I don't think we know yet. I mean, the jury's still out. They've got a great center that's centering everything, pardon the pun, and Joey Grant. You know, he's a veteran. He's a guy that is level-headed. He's a leader. So that makes everything work a little bit better, I think, when you have a young offensive line. But we simply haven't seen them enough to know. They've got a great guy that coaches that unit in Brett T. So we get to know a little bit more about them as well against Missouri.
He's Carson Engel. I got one more thing for you here before we let you go. What is your prediction for this game this weekend?
You know, I think that UCF can edge them out, but it's one of these games where I could see anything happening. I could see Missouri blowing the Knights out. I could see it being a close win for Missouri. I could see it being a close win for UCF. I think they'll be able to get it done simply because I think the expectations are raised. And to start out the season 0-2 is just almost something that has become unacceptable here in Orlando for this program based on the success that they had last year and based on the fact that they've sort of been building to this consistency with 10 wins in three of the last four seasons.
He's Carson Engel. He's a writer for SB Nation's Underdog Dynasty. You can check his work out there. You can also follow him on Twitter. Carson, thank you so much for coming on with us this morning. Really appreciate it, man.
Hey, thanks, Brandon. Enjoyed it, man.
All right, no problem. He is Carson Engel. He's a writer for SB Nation's Underdog Dynasty. So, I mean, the fact that they had a running back out, a wide receiver out, and then a new quarterback in the
first whole game for Holman.
So that's an interesting little wrinkle here that I didn't really realize.
Well, I did not realize Steinbeck was out, and it makes sense because I was watching the game and they didn't run the ball at all.
No, yeah,
and now it makes sense because Steinbeck last year, as Carson said, even with Storm Johnson there, who's one of the better running backs in the entire country last year, he was still second team all conference. So if you're a Mizzou fan. 2 years ago, Mizzou went down to Orlando, won 21-16.
Yep.
This is going to be a very close game, guys. Mizzou's favored by 11.5 points. It's way too many points, at least in my book.
It's down to 10.
Now it's down to 10?
Yep. So
It started at 11.5, which was way too many. 10's still a pretty big line.
It's a big number.
It's a big number, especially after last week when Mizzou was 3.5.
We'll get back into this here in just a moment. We've given you the UCF perspective. What should Mizzou fans be looking for this weekend? We'll discuss it next on the Morning Blitz. KCOU, 88.1 FM online, KCOU.FM.
I see what you did here, Brandon.
You see that?
See what you did.
I'm Brandon Kiley. He's Jeff Parles. The show is The Morning Blitz. Huge thanks to Kevin Harlan for joining us earlier. Also, a huge thanks to Carson Engel for previewing the UCF-Mizzou game with us from a UCF perspective. So, Jeff, what are you expecting from this game? What are you expecting as a Mizzou, from the Mizzou perspective?
Well, I have the call that on Saturday here for KCOU. Me, Julian Douglas, Joe Leyland here, 11 a.m., kickoff, you can get us here on KCOU 88.1 FM. You can get us on KCOU.FM. Get us on the TuneIn app. Get us anywhere. It's not like the NCAA tournament where it could have gotten us on the line. But yeah, well, I have the call this weekend along with those two. Listen, the one thing that I'm looking forward to, Mizzou's offense looked electric.
It looks good.
Against Toledo.
Looks really good.
It looked excellent, except for that one little blip there in the third quarter where they decided to stop playing. Toledo scored the two touchdowns to get it down to 14, and then, bam, they turned it back on immediately. Mm-hmm. I want to see the consistency from Matty Mauk. That is the biggest thing for Mizzou's success this year. If Mauk is consistent, Mizzou can win those 10 games, win those 11 games potentially. And this is a trap game. This is a vintage trap game. You have Indiana next week. I know people will say if Mizzou wins, that's a trap game. Indiana's not good. Indiana's not a good football team.
And then you're looking forward to that South Carolina game. Yeah,
but Indiana's not a good football team. Central Florida's a very good football team. This is a good team coming in here. And what Carson said, Penn State's no slouch. I realize the Big Ten is down, but Penn State's one of the better teams in the conference, which may also be an indictment of the Big Ten, but they have a really good quarterback in Christian Hackenberg. Their defense is solid. They're a solid team. And UCF took them to the limit. Took them to the absolute limit. And that was with a half of just brutally bad quarterback play. The first half was bad. Was really bad quarterback play.
Yeah, Pete DeNovo, their starting quarterback. DeNovo was 3 for 8 for 18 yards.
Yeah, DeNovo was awful in the first half.
Yep.
Holman comes in, and Holman was great.
200 yards and a half.
Yeah. Penn State,
without one of their starting receivers.
Yeah. And without
without their starting running back.
Yeah. It's just, this is a game where Mizzou has to be really careful. They have to be very careful that they don't overlook Central Florida. And the one thing is, you have an 11 a.m. kickoff. It's an early kick. If Mizzou's going to overlook someone, it will be an 11 a.m. kickoff. And for it, if Mizzou fans, if your expectations for this team is for them to get to the playoff, them to get to the SEC championship game again. And I realize this is not a conference game, but this is a really big test to see what this team is actually made of this year.
I'm interested to see how Matty Mauk plays, because Christian Hackenberg, one of the best young quarterbacks
Hackenberg
in the country,
tore him up.
He did tear him up. He also threw two picks.
Yes.
Now, I know Matty Mauk's a good player. I like Matty Mauk a lot. And I think what he's done this year has been pretty incredible, really. 8 touchdowns, 2 picks in the first 2 games of the year.
He was great. He was great against Toledo.
That's amazing. And I really like Christian Hackenberg, potential number 1 pick in the 2016 draft.
Yeah.
And when I see that he threw 2 picks and 1 touchdown against him, I know he threw 454 yards. That's great, but you got to score in the end zone.
Brandon, That game's in Ireland.
Definitely.
It's a weird scenario for a college team.
Weird scenario for UCF, too, though.
Well, true, but also the one thing also, UCF didn't play last week because of that game in Ireland.
Yeah.
They had a bye week. This is 2 weeks prep.
Yep.
For probably the best team on their schedule they're going to play all year. And what Carson was saying, if Central Florida wants to get one of those bids into...
This is the game they have to win.
Into the whatever they're calling it, the group of five.
Yeah.
They want to get into either Cotton Bowl... Or the Orange Bowl, or the Fiesta Bowl, whatever, the Peach Bowl.
Those four bowls.
The tie-ins this year. They have to win on Saturday. If they want to
be... The only other top 25 team on their schedule is BYU.
Well, they're done if they lose today. If they lose on Saturday, they're not getting one of those four bowls.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be Marshall or ECU that ends up getting it. But it really... This is... I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is a more critical game for Central Florida than it is Missouri.
Pretty critical game for both.
And I realize this is Mizzou's biggest non-conference game by a wide margin.
Yeah.
By a wide margin. I know they just went on the road against Toledo in a game where they were, for whatever reason, only favored by 3.5 points.
That was nonsense.
And Pinkel's return and so on and so forth. They already passed with flying colors in that game. They let Toledo's running back run for over 100 yards, which... The run defense is also what I'm looking for.
Run defense
has been bad so far to begin this year. 2 100-yard rushers already. That's not... I know, and don't forget, just three games ago now, Trey Mason ran for over 300 yards. So, the run defense... Can the run defense show up against a really good running back? I don't know.
The thing that I see with the run defense is you just got to eliminate the big plays. If you eliminate the big plays, you've been great. I mean, the first game of the year, you had the 75-yard run on the first carry from scrimmage. And then from then on out, you have like 12 carries for 22 yards. You can live with that. That's great run defense. Same thing last week.
Yeah, but that first three, yeah, but the big plays, you can't give up big plays on the ground.
That's what I'm saying. That's what
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
I'm with you on that. It just can't happen.
It's a huge problem. And whenever you eliminate those, if you eliminate the big plays and you start just giving up 5 or 6 yards instead of 38, instead of 75, instead of 45, then all of a sudden you're a great run defense and you're rolling. Because then instead of picking up those first downs or throwing on third down, you've got the pass rushers going full blast. You've got turnovers happening like we saw last week. And all of a sudden, you're back to the Mizzou team that we saw last year with a better offense, with a better big play offense, with Matty Mock at the helm, who has really impressed over the first 2 weeks. I think I'm not going to give my prediction quite yet. But I think Mizzou's in a good spot this week. I think Mizzou's got a chance to really impress some people against
UCF. And you know what? This is an impact game for Mizzou, because if Mizzou comes out and pounds Central Florida, pounds them.
All of a sudden, they're a top 15 team.
Beat him 38-10 or 38-14. Come out and really whip Central Florida into the ground, which I'm not sure if Mizzou's capable of that at this point.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Let's say they played him near the end of the year. Who knows? Because obviously Central Florida could be pretty dang good on their own right. So, you know what? It's just tricky. This is a tricky game for Mizzou. This is really, I think, where we're going to finally be able to see what we're going to get out of this team. If they come out and whip Central Florida, this could be one special year. It really can be.
I think there's really three turning points of the season for Mizzou this year. One is this weekend.
This is one.
One's against South Carolina, and the third is against Georgia. If you win this game, you pass the first test. If you win the South Carolina game, you pass the second test. If you beat Georgia, all of a sudden, you're the front runner for the SEC.
If you win all three of those games,
you're national title contender.
You have a chance to make the playoff.
Yeah.
You have a darn good chance to make the playoff in year one of the playoff.
Then it's just Texas A&M, basically. You got to take care of business plus Texas A&M.
Listen, I don't know if they're beating A&M.
It's going to be tough, especially on the road.
It's going to be tough to beat them in College Station. It's going to be tough to beat Georgia here.
Yeah. I mean, you've got some really big tests.
Honestly, from what I've seen from South Carolina, obviously I have to see how they play against Georgia this weekend, but from what I've seen from South Carolina,
I'm more impressed with like Tennessee, Texas A&M.
From what I've seen from South Carolina, Mizzou's got to go in there and beat them.
Yeah.
This is the year they have to beat South Carolina. They just have to.
I agree.
And you look at... You look at it, I agree with what you just said. You have those three. I add a fourth and a fifth for me. You add Florida the following week after Georgia, especially with that being the third game in a three-game stretch without South Carolina and Georgia. If you can come out, especially if you win those first two games, come out and don't have a letdown against Florida, a team who's definitely inferior to those other two teams, that's what you get out of a championship team.
Yep.
And then A&M, obviously. That's the game that could determine the fate of a lot of things for the playoff in the SEC.
It all starts this week, and it all starts at 11 o'clock. As Jeff said, you can hear him on the call right here on KCOU 88.1 FM and KCOU.FM. I'm Brandon Kiley. He's Jeff Parles. Appreciate Carson Engel for joining us. Appreciate Kevin Harlan for joining us as well. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow, 7 to 8 a.m. on